Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Happy to be here on a Saturday night. I am personally jazzed about tonight's program because our first guest is the driving force behind a band that I have touted here many times over the years, Lord Huron. I remember hearing this song back in 2012, might have been driving in my car. It was big and lushly produced and didn't sound like anything else I had heard on the radio or anywhere else then or since. The song was Ends of the Earth, and some of you might remember we played it on the show multiple times, along with several other Lord Huron songs, bought the album back in 2012, Lonesome Dreams, and was hooked. And every album that's come afterward has been even more impressive. And it works for Coast to Coast because the imagery in these songs is on the same wavelength as the subjects we kick around, as weird as they are. The music is often cosmic in scope, a little mystical, and sometimes apocalyptic, with ghosts and curses and doomed, forlorn souls in search of something else. Well, in this hour, the founder of Lord Huron, Ben Schneider, joins us to talk about the band, what comes next, and some of that spooky imagery he weaves into his songs and stories. I've been really looking forward to it, and for any Lord Huron fans who've tuned into Coast to Coast for the first time, welcome. Then in hour two, we continue on the general path of high strangeness. Joshua Cutchin and Timothy Renner have put together an encyclopedic look at this weird swath of unexplained phenomena that people have reported in the forests and mountains and other wild places. Some of it extends way back in myth and legend and folklore, but these two writers bring it all up to date and explore possible explanations, none of which seem to fully explain what people are seeing and reporting all over the world. Good stuff coming up later. Webmaster Sean and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from various media sources. We call it Knapp's News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast website, a story about the next generation space telescope, 100 times more powerful than Hubble, and what mysteries might be solved, what we'll be able to learn about the universe. Also, physicists appear to be on the threshold of something big. The world's largest atom smasher has found a strange pattern during experiments they've been conducting. Evidence perhaps of a new fundamental particle, maybe. Check out the report. And you might recall reading about the hobbits, the so-called hobbits that were discovered on an island in Southeast Asia a couple of years ago. These were small people, offshoots of the human family, never seen before a few years ago, and who were still around, I think, 50,000 years ago or so when humans were here. And what is their connection to the human family? You can read the latest info, that and more, in Knapp's News. While you're on the Coast website, check out how to become a Coast Insider. The cost is pennies a day if you subscribe for a year. Gives you access to a huge archive of programs and interviews. You can listen as often as you want, anytime you want. You can also subscribe to George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, which dives into similar content, except it's on television. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the pet goat. Put on a pot of Joe. Slide your bod into those flannel jammies and your toes into the bunny slippers. Plop yourself down in the Barca lounger or someplace comfy, turn down the lights, and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Lord Huron's Ben Schneider talks about the parallel realities he's created. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Ben Schneider is a founding member of the indie folk band Lord Huron. He began writing music in his hometown of Lansing, Michigan, and went on to study visual arts at the University of Michigan. In 2010, he formed Lord Huron as a solo project, recorded his first few EPs entirely on his own, and then turned to some friends from back home to help perform in live shows, and they've never looked back. Three critically acclaimed albums later, they're poised to release their latest work and have essentially created a parallel reality as a vehicle for not only an upcoming album, but streaming visual endeavors as well. Ben, I hope you don't mind that I would suggest that you'd be right at home with us weirdos here, but it's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to it all week. I really appreciate it.
You know, I first got an email from a PR guy asking me, do you know about a band called Lord Huron and would I want to have them on the show? I thought it must be a prank because, I mean, anyone who knows me knows how often I've carried the torch for the band and to the point where my friends don't want to hear it anymore. But it wasn't a prank, and I'm glad.
Well, I appreciate you spreading the good word, man. It really means a lot to me. Thank you.
As I said in the intro, you know, many of our listeners know about the band from the bumper songs we play as often as I can get away with it. But for those who don't know about you or the band, a little background. You were born in Michigan, raised in Michigan, and thus the band name comes from the Great Lake that you visited so often growing up, right?
That's right, yeah. My family would go up there in the summers. And yeah, it's a beautiful place. You know, it's kind of an overlooked part of the world, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, those big lakes are just like, they're like oceans, you know, you can't see across, and the water's fresh, and there's fish in there, and yeah, I used to kind of fancy myself the ruler of that part of the world when I was a kid, and that idea kind of carried over. I recorded the first couple of songs up there, actually, and before I knew I was going to make a real go of it, you know, it was just sort of a lark, but it took hold, And like you said, we've never looked back.
The sound that you've crafted, I don't think it sounds like any other band. And the Michigan vibe is in all of it. And it sounds like music that you'd listen to when you're outside at night under the stars in the mountains or a forest or a desert. And that's probably on purpose.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do, you know. And a lot of the ways we think about music is very visually. When we're writing a song, you know, we'll think that way. We'll say, let's make this sound like a glacier or like a starlit sky. What does that sound like? And that's a really interesting challenge, you know, to try to recreate that stuff sonically. And yeah, it's kind of the best compliment I could get is when people say it makes me feel like I'm in those places or I love to enjoy it in those places. That's kind of hitting it right in the sweet spot for us.
I think I read that your dad is a TV newsman, which, speaking as a TV newsman, I'd say that he must be responsible for putting you on the right path here.
Well,
I'm biased.
A family of journalists. He was actually a daily columnist for a newspaper in my hometown. And my mother was also a journalist, and my brother and sister both worked as journalists as well. I'm kind of the only one who didn't end up in that profession to some extent. But, yeah, I certainly learned a lot from there. Sensibilities, and I have a lot of respect for that profession, that's for sure. It's a wonderful thing. And you know, their literary leanings lent me a lot, and also their love of music really impacted me greatly.
So I had read that although you, as kids, you would all write little ditties and sing them as you're doing chores, that your dad would play guitar, but it wasn't particularly, there weren't musicians. It was a musical family in that you all liked music, but you were going to be an artist, right? A painter?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, it's all kind of the same thing in my mind. Like, I just always was interested in telling stories, I guess. And you know, sometimes they came out as music, and sometimes they came out as visuals. It seemed like I had sort of the most talent, I guess, in my own mind, in visual stuff at first. But music was always a part of it. You know, I had bands growing up. The guys I play with now. Were guys I started playing with when I was 11 years old. You know, we made our first band playing punk rock and in high school. And yeah, I don't know. I kind of see it all as one, the pieces of the same thing. I'm trying to communicate the same stuff through each one. It's sometimes one's more more expressive than another.
You moved to L.A. to explore music as a career. You cranked out two or maybe three of these EPs. You wrote the songs, you produced them, you performed all the instruments and sang them. And I don't know how you made that sound by yourself. I mean, I've got two of them. And, it's a big sound for one guy.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do these days with how easy it is to record. You know, I remember getting my first four-track tape recorder for Christmas when I was a teenager. And that felt like a whole new world to me, that I could record something and then record another thing on top of it, maybe even my own voice on top of it. And it was like there was two of me. It was like me from another, a parallel dimension, singing alongside. And that was just such a cool feeling. It opened up this whole new world for me. And then, you know, and these days it's even more robust what you can do with a simple setup. And we've just kind of been pushing the limits of that ever since, you know, me and my buddies.
There were limits, of course, to what you could do on stage. If you're going to perform, you needed a band. So you go to your buddies from back home, they come out, and the rest is history. And I imagine you can get, when you're producing albums and doing it all yourself, you can get stuck in your ways, not used to collaborating on the production end of it.
Yeah, I mean, what's great about the team of people I got is, well, they're all super talented musicians, but we've known each other so long that it's like, you know, we're almost like brothers. It's like you don't pull your punches. It's all very honest and open, and we can call each other on our crap. So I think it works well because, you know, they kind of trust me as sort of the driving creative force, but they're always there to tell me when something doesn't feel right, and I appreciate that.
Lonesome Dreams comes out 2012. You create this theme, sort of an umbrella, and you found a narrative that kind of tied all these songs and stories together. A fiction writer, a novelist named George Ranger Johnson, who doesn't really exist, but he writes adventure stories in your scenario, and he's kind of a cross between Zane Grey and Nathaniel Hawthorne, something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about right. He's got a little Kilgore Trout thrown in there, too. I don't know if you remember him from the Vonnegut novels, but
And you're writing songs. Are you writing the songs first, and then you find a unifying theme, some umbrella concept that ties them together, or you find the concept and write songs to fit it?
You know, I don't have any sort of system. It just kind of develops together, I guess. I had themes I wanted to touch on, and I think a lot of those themes came from some of my favorite source material, you know, adventure novels, Western novels. And it just felt like the right fit. I felt like, I don't know, I felt like somehow I could draw from this imaginary person I created. It was almost like it helped me be more creative to pretend like I was cribbing it from somebody else. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but
yeah.
But that's kind of what it felt like. It was as though I could open up a new creative door by making up someone to reference. And that's kind of been a theme we've just gone with kind of across all of our records, honestly, just in a different format each time.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was fun imagining this person that was myself, but was other, and being able to sort of put myself in their shoes and write from their perspective.
Well, I don't want to compare you to the Beatles, but I mean, Sgt. Pepper is sort of the same thing. They created alter egos and freed themselves up to write songs from a different perspective. And you did the same thing with Strange Trails, this overarching storyline, this badass biker comes back from the grave. A lot of dark stuff there, again, but same kind of umbrella structure.
Yeah, that time around, it was more, I felt like I was drawing more from sort of fictional comic books. So it was kind of like a heightened version of, sort of a somewhat comic book version of these stories. And, you know, I love fiction, but I think it always has to start from someplace personal or true, you know, to something I've experienced or been really close to. And then I love to just let it spin off into fiction and kind of see what truth you can get at through being.
And you
fictional.
You write fiction, right? I saw that somewhere, fiction as opposed to the fictional scenarios in the songs.
I have a little bit. It's something I really want to pursue more, honestly. It seems like, you know, I mean, I just love to read, and I always have. And to me, that's kind of like, I don't know, the ultimate art form. It's kind of intimidating to me. It's just it's a daunting task. But I think I'm kind of circling it throughout my life and maybe closing in on it, hopefully.
So there are some recurring themes that, as I said, are sort of simpatico with what we talk about around here. You've got ghosts, the dead returning from the beyond. You got dark apocalyptic imagery sometimes in the music videos. And, you know, I've read some other interviews where you said, you know, we have a limited time here, and when it's over, it's over. So you don't necessarily believe ghosts are real, that they're characters that you've created really can return from the other side.
Well, see, the way I think about it is those ideas to me are so, humans' obsessions with those ideas say so much about what's inside us and what's going on. And I don't know. It's not that I necessarily believe that ghosts are real in the literal sense, but I think it's such a beautiful metaphor that we've come up with to define this feeling we have of people we've lost and how they hang around in our hearts and in our heads, and haunt us, you know, throughout our lives. It's almost like I want to believe it, you know, because people I've lost and, you know, miss and wish they were still around haunting me, you know, to some degree. And I just think a lot of that stuff, it's not that I believe it or not necessarily, but I really believe in its use as a sort of metaphor, as a way of working out our internal struggles.
Yep. And fears. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said that you get kind of dark now and then. The title of the 2018 album, Vida Noir, Black Void, Nothingness. I mean, dark is baked right into the title. You're traveling to the edge of the cosmos, to places to people go when they die. The songs are about people in bleak situations. They're shattered. They're lonely, desperate, heartbroken, despondent. They're ready to crawl across a desert of glass on their bellies, get to the end of the earth, and then maybe jump off and end it all. But strangely, strangely enough, the songs make people happy.
Yeah, right.
They do. I've seen the fan reactions, how listening to your songs, as bleak and desolate as some of these people are, these characters, the songs help people get through breakups and divorces and bad times in their life.
You know, I think that album in particular was a reflection of sort of the things I was thinking about at the time. I love reading in addition to fiction, I love reading science books, and I don't pretend to understand them all necessarily, but, you know, at the time I was kind of in this place where I was feeling dwarfed just by the immensity of the cosmos and of the human condition. And I don't know, I know people often talk about how that it can feel desolate or depressing to learn sort of the vastness of the universe, but there's something I find sort of comforting about it. And I think maybe there's a similar thing people are finding in those songs where it's like, yeah, it seems like a kind of a bleak picture, but I don't know. You can kind of, it feels nice that someone else is feeling that way or is feeling that, has gone through something like that. And you can not feel so alone.
Yeah. I we've talked about it a lot of times with different guests here, you know, the march of science, the march of knowledge, the more we know about the universe and the cosmos, the more humble we need to become. And it can be depressing, but as I said about your song, somehow the agony that you describe becomes hopeful to your listeners, to your fans, because your characters, as desperate as they are, they always hold out a tiny ray of hope that things might somehow work out. That's mm-hmm. what I get out of it anyway.
Yep, I think that's it too. People push to the brink is a really interesting place to write a song from, I think.
Talk to me about the year of COVID, a year without touring. I mean, so many musicians, it's been hard on them. I don't know how they pay the bills. I think it looks like you've made good use of the time, you and your band, Long Lost, which we'll get into in the next segment. Seriously ambitious, but I mean, could you have done all this that we'll get into without, if you had been out on tour all this much?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, we've been pretty consistently on the road for the past 10 years. Taking breaks to record records, but this has been different. You know, we've had to sort of find different places to channel all that energy and time. The timing, you know, we feel fortunate in some ways. The timing could have been worse. We were not supposed to be on the road for most of last year anyway because we were recording a record. You know, if we had been having to rely on that year for income from touring, it would have been a lot harder on us, but we had already sort of planned to be off the road, thankfully. We started recording the record in February 2020. So, you know, we had just finished all our live tracking when the pandemic really hit and things started shutting down. So, it was just, you know, we had made all these plans for how we wanted to record, and with these big groups of people, string players, singers, you know, and we just had to kind of change gears and figure out a different way to do it quite suddenly. And then it was, oh, well, but we'll be back to playing shows in a couple of months, surely. Can't last longer than that. But, you know, as you know, it's just gone on. And like you said, we've had to find other things to do. And the main thing was trying to find a way to, you know, keep contact with our fans and feel like we're keeping a connection with them, because, you know, they're everything. They're what keeps us going, and they're the greatest group of weirdos in the world. And so we decided to do the streaming show as a way to sort of not recreate a live experience, but give them a new experience where they could feel like they could connect with us and we could connect with them. And yeah, it's been really special. It's really felt good.
Well, the new album is called Long Lost. It comes out in May, but in between, as you mentioned, you've got this streaming series, Alive from Whispering Pines. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to get into the parallel universe that you created to go along with the album, the songs. It's really vivid imagery there and a sound unlike any other band we know of. The song is called The World Ender by Lord Huron from their Strange Trails album. A badass biker from beyond the grave is back with a vengeance. It's a great song. And the idea, the music videos that sort of tie that album together are almost like a movie. And Ben Schneider, my guest right now, has sort of upped the ante in that structure for an album and the approach to marketing the album with this tremendous new project that's been unveiled over the last couple of months. The album Long Lost comes out in May, but the streaming videos that go along with it and performances are out now. We're going to talk about that structure, the parallel universe that Ben created, right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Ben Schneider of Lord Huron. So Ben, the new project, it's the streaming project, is Alive from Whispering Pines, and it's not Live from Whispering Pines, it's Alive, which gives you a little hint that nothing is quite normal at Whispering Pines. But the approach of an overarching theme or narrative that we talked about, you took it to a whole new level for this. This is a parallel reality. It's populated with all kinds of interesting characters and storylines. Tell us how the idea came together.
Well, the essential piece of this streaming show is our studio, Whispering Pines. We've been working there for the past 7 years or so. We recorded our last three records there. And we've always kind of been curious about the history of the place. I mean, it's an old studio. Seems to be have been built in the early 70s or so. And it was worked in for a while, we know, and then sort of just abandoned for a while. By the time we got to it, you know, it was kind of derelict, and we had to tear everything out and rebuild it. But we always kind of wondered what had happened there, and we couldn't find much history on it. So, I don't know, maybe it was a few years ago, we started just kind of making up what had happened there, kind of imagining the people who'd been there. Because it really feels, I mean, like we were talking about before about ghosts, it really feels kind of haunted in there, especially late at night when you're working. And it feels like there's someone hanging around in there. And kind of like with George Ranger Johnson, we started creating these characters to use as surrogate creative people who we could kind of crib off of. So when it came time to make the streaming show, we thought, well, let's record it at the studio. Makes sense. And let's make it sort of the centerpiece of it. So there's all these characters who we've created you get to meet, and chief among them is Tubbs Tarbell, who's kind of like the patriarch of the label. He's kind of the guy who runs the studio and produces all the records. And, you know, he's quite a character with a way with words. And yeah, you're not quite sure where he's come from or if he's even really there, I think. But
yeah, he's kind of kind of cadaverous, kind of a cross between, I don't know, Porter Wagner and Don Knotts, maybe funny and quirky. And we're not really sure if he's actually alive or not, you know.
Yeah, and he's really fond of all his old friends who he used to work with there. And so a big part of his part of the show, other than introducing us, is kind of reminiscing about all these characters. And that's how you get to meet them and learn about Tubbs's relationship with them. So, you know, it was a way for us to create a bigger world in a time when it's not easy to connect with people. And, you know, we wanted to keep the production small, can't have a bunch of actors or anything, just because of safety and also just because of our tiny budget. But we wanted to try to find a way to make it bigger than it is, or hint at the wider world of the album.
Well, it's literary, it's really creative, it's fun, and you don't know exactly where it's going. I mean, the details you went into with these commercial spots that pop up, that slide in and out, just really funny. I mean, the names of these long gone artists, Donnie and Midge and Hefty Lefty, I mean, it makes you smile at the song titles too.
Thank you. Yeah,
Did you write those, or is that a team? What the band came up with it? What?
I think I've written most of them, but you know, every now and then there'll just be someone will say something that sticks. I mean, Mark, our drummer, named that clown Boo Boo Slippers, which I thought was a great name for a clown. Yeah, I don't know. Even the name of the station, which is WBUB, we kind of all call each other Bub. And so that just kind of stuck as a nice name for a nice set of call numbers for the station.
You had said how important it was for you, the band, to stay in touch with the fans, and this was it. I mean, a lot of bands and artists have done streaming concerts over the last year as a way to have some income and revenue, but also stay in touch. But this is a production, as you said, it's a small budget, but it's really creative. So these 55-minute, hour-long shows, including a bunch of performances where you redo previous songs and then introduce new songs, and then you've got humor and characters and commercials and ghosts going through it. It's just a really unique approach. I haven't seen anybody else do it.
Yeah, kind of the thing that's helped us connect most with the fans is we decided to open up this hotline where they could request songs or just ask a question or whatever. And, you know, we expected a few calls, but, I mean, the response was just amazing to the point where we couldn't even handle the volume a couple of times. And, you know, a lot of it is requests or, you know, questions about when our album's coming out or this and that. But there's also just people telling stories and just saying how much they appreciate the work we're putting into it. And that just has made us feel so good and feel like we're connected with them again. And, yeah, it's been an interesting ride. I mean, we get some crazy messages on there, some really, really wild stuff. And it's been such a joy to listen to it all.
There's one, I think it was maybe the second one, where Tubbs goes to the answer machine. He says, oh, see, we got some calls here. Let's just see. And they presses the button, and the recorded message comes on. You have 2,000 messages, something like that. And he's,
yeah.
You really did have that many.
We really did have that many. It was it was insane, but we really did listen to each and every one of them, and we'll answer a few. Probably can't get to them all, but some of them are unanswerable questions anyway about the nature of the universe and whatnot. So we appreciate those, and I hope people understand that we don't have the answers yet.
No one does. You're not alone. Like I said, there's 3 of those that have come out so far, 3 hours of production, 1 more before the album comes out. Each one has performed songs, re-recordings of the songs from the first 3 albums, that are great. I mean, these performances, they're different. It's a different tempo for a lot of the songs, and mm-hmm. it must have been fun to re-record them, all over again.
Yeah.
In a different way.
Really, really fun. I mean, you know, we decided to do it with just the 4 of us. You know, usually when we tour, we have a couple of additional musicians, but we just decided to let's just see what we do. And it's just the 4 of us doing, you know, a take on this song. You know, we try to just do it in a few takes and do it differently, you know, try to make it interesting for us and hopefully for everybody who's tuning in, you know, to hear it done in a different way. And, you know, it's been a great way to work out our muscles musically and creatively, and you know, with the response from the people has been wonderful. Some people are saying they prefer these versions to the album versions, which I'll take that as a compliment. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. It's almost blasphemous, I guess, to say that, but a couple of them, I Meet Me in the Woods, which is a great song, but in the album, but it's really good. Dead Man's Hand, same thing.
They sound
really good. It could be, you could reissue a new version of these as an album, I would think.
Yeah, we might do. And I mean, just releasing the visuals as well. You know, I don't know if people still buy VHS tapes, but maybe we'll sell those.
So tell me about Long Lost. It comes out in May. How excited you are about it. Give us a general idea of the structure for that one.
Really excited. You know, it's been in the works for a while here. And going along with our theme of the ghosts that haunt our studio, we wanted this record to feel like almost like a long lost classic from another dimension. So, I mean, I don't know if we've achieved that, but it's good to shoot the moon. You know, that's what we were trying to go for. Sort of feels like, I don't know, some classic album you somehow missed out on that. It's nostalgic in a way you can't quite put your finger on. It's almost like someone else's memory of an album. That was kind of the goal we set out to achieve. And so we channeled all these invented artists to try to make that happen.
the second song that you released from it, we don't have it here, but it was, you put it out a week or so ago. It's an interesting mishmash of different sort of genres. There's some Beach Boy type vocals in there, some surf guitar, so a little bit of Western twang that slips into it. These are things that obviously are influences for you and things that you've liked in other music.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of surf music and of the Beach Boys and of Western, Ennio Morricone. Try to stuff as much of that stuff as I can in there. And what we've learned over the years is that, you know, there's kind of a musical shorthand you can use where certain sounds, certain rhythms will do so much lifting for you in terms of making people feel a certain way just because of all the memories they have tied to a certain chord change or a certain beat, you know, the Bo Diddley beat or the, and it's amazing how much you can say just kind of using some of those figures. And bending them to your will as much as you can, adding your own touches to it.
Well, Long Lost, as I said, comes out in May. It seems like each of your albums, the band has gotten bigger, which, of course, you know, as performers, musicians, songwriters, you want as many people as you can to see it. But I've read about your struggles with the idea about fame, that you want people to hear it and see it. You want to move from performing small clubs to ballrooms to the biggest stages, where you're headed later this year, but at the same time, it is terrifying to you because of what it will mean to your personal life and privacy.
Yeah, I really value my privacy, to some degree, my anonymity. You know, the thought of going out into the world and not being able to keep to yourself or do what you want to do without being hounded is honestly pretty terrifying to me. But, you know, that's the price, you know, you kind of have to pay to do what we're trying to do. Because, like you said, I want to reach as many people, but I don't want it to be about me. You know, I'm not into a cult of personality or anything. I want it to be about the things we're making and those stories. And, honestly, I don't know how to keep that, how to make that that balance work exactly yet, but figuring out as we go.
So we won't see you with your own reality show or dating one of the Kardashians with cameras following you around?
I don't think so. Not in this dimension.
Are your bandmates of the same mind? Are they sort of worried about the future? Enthusiastic, but a little worried?
I think so. I think they share some of the same trepidations I have about all that. But like me, they're just really excited and you know, just kind of thankful that we get to do what we're doing. I mean, you know, a dream we've had since we were lads growing up is coming true, and we've been able to have a life doing this thing that we love to do. So I think mostly the feeling is just being content and very thankful that we get to do it, honestly.
So I had mentioned about how the imagery, the storylines fit so well with this show, but it's fit with a lot of other shows. TVs and movies have made a great use of your songs, and it's brought you a whole new audience. Did you set out to do that, or they came knocking on the door and said, this would fit for our project?
Well, thankfully, people seem to really feel like our music lends itself well to storytelling, you know, to bolstering their stories. And that's great with me. You know, I'd much rather be helping to tell a story than selling laundry detergent or something. So I always prefer to put our music in places where a story is being told if we can. And, you know, that's kind of worked like radio for us. We're not really a big radio band. We don't get played on the radio a whole lot. But the way we've been able to reach people has been through these placements on TV shows and movies and a few commercials. And, you know, I think that's been great for us. It's really, really helped us reach a lot of people. And like I said, if we can help someone tell a story, that feels good to me.
We got a couple of fans on the line. I'll take a call maybe too, real quick. Wildcard Line, Mike in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Mike.
Good Good morning, George. Thank you so much for taking my call this evening. And Ben, wow, thank you so much for being here. I'm a huge fan of your work, and I've really been getting into your music lately. I've heard the bumper music on Coast to Coast before, so just thank you for being here tonight. So I had kind of a comment and a question. So Ben, back in 2018, Barack Obama listed your song Wait by the River as one of his favorite 22 songs of the year, which is obviously, you know, very high praise. And I wanted to ask, what is it like as an artist when you get that kind of recognition on such a big scale? And also, I have to ask this because it's kind of interesting. How did you come up with the name for the band? Thank you.
Well, thanks for the questions. Regarding the name of the band, as I kind of mentioned before, we grew up in Michigan, and I spent a lot of time up on Lake Huron. And, yeah, I just kind of imagined myself as the ruler up there when I was a kid. And then as I became an adult, I don't know, those memories really stuck with me and kind of formed me as a person. So I thought I'd pay homage to that with the name of the band. As for getting high praise from high places such as former President Obama, it's an amazing feeling. I mean,
you had no idea it was coming, right?
No, I mean, no idea at all. In fact, I don't know. You still kind of have that thing where when anybody, even if, you know, fans at shows, when you see them mouthing the words in the front row, you kind of can't believe it, that someone has paid attention and has learned the lyrics. So yeah, anytime I hear someone of high standing likes it, I mean, that feels good for sure. But even, you know, everybody at the show, when I see them mouthing the words, I'm just like, it's so touching that someone, that I've touched someone that much, you know, it kind of reflects right back at me, and I get the great feeling that they're getting from the music. So it's a beautiful thing.
I saw a newspaper piece that asked you about songs that you like, and you responded with something about a cover of a Roy Acuff song. And I was thinking to myself, well, you don't hear a lot of musicians talking about Roy Acuff. I'll see you, Roy Acuff, and raise you, Lefty Frizzell.
I love that. Saginaw, Michigan is one of my favorite recordings ever.
It's I remember hearing that as a kid.
Yeah.
Well, can't wait to hear Long Lost. Can't wait to see you out on the road. Assuming that the world gets back to normal where we can have concerts. I saw Outside Lands. You're slated to appear there, but you had to cancel the Red Rocks thing. That's too bad, but hopefully you get to tour and I'll come and stand around and listen.
Yeah, hopefully it's coming back, and we're gonna get out there and see everybody again as soon as we can.
All right, Ben Schneider, Lord Huron, thanks so much for being here. I really enjoyed it, and please keep us in the loop. Thanks.
Thanks, George.
All right.